heroin chic. I mean, as you said earlier, she looked ragged, and yes, she looked strung out, but she also looked like a pretty 17-year-old model. Not just a girl, a pretty 17-year-old model.
A pretty model, yes, absolutely. And I mean, I think also when we're thinking about, you know, interventions or how to get the word out or what effective drug education looks like or any of those things that you probably don't want to use a commercial to do that just because of the lack of effectiveness. But I think that a lot of people in recovery were really offended by it because it oversimplifies and somewhat glamorizes it without saying, you know, we do recover. It's stigmatizing in a way of glamorizing it that the cheerleader is the one who gets addicted. Do you know what I mean? And that's not actually a realistic portrayal of heroin addiction. And I think that while possibly pulling on some heartstrings of parents and such, I don't think that it did very much except, at least from my perspective, to stir up the recovery community to be against the SAD and the perception that this was a waste of money and a lost opportunity to actually do something. Well, I think one of the things that, you know, we want people to address, you know, substance use disorder, and we want people to do things, but we do want people to do things that are thoughtful, and we want them to check. I think people in recovery especially want these kinds of things to be vetted through them too, you know, and to be vetted through young people and to work with other people who, harm reduction people, a lot of different stakeholders, because it's not just when you're doing a PSA, you're speaking on behalf of a lot of different constituencies, and we need to be included in that process, or else you're going to hear from us, I think, is the bottom line on that.
I've been speaking with Kathy Kane Willis. She is the director of the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy at Roosevelt University in Illinois. Kathy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Doug.
This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
Earlier this year, the KBOO News reported on one of our own who was missing. Tonight, we report on the death of our beloved colleague, Nathan Behensky. Nathan passed away suddenly due to an accident early on the morning of January 1st. He slipped and fell off a dock near his home in Portland, Oregon, and drowned. His fate was not known until January 28th, when his body was recovered. He resided on the river with his father, Michael Behensky, and his stepmother, Linda Rainey. Nathan was born on June 18, 1983, in Portland, to Michael and Candace Miller Behensky. He attended Maplewood Elementary, Robert Gray Middle School, and Wilson High School, where he graduated, all in Portland. His favorite subjects were history, Spanish, and art. He also went to college at Portland State University and Portland Community College, where he studied history and Japanese. Nate was a licensed pharmacy technician and worked in that field for several years. Another occupation was door-to-door canvassing for progressive causes, get out the vote, environmental, and most recently, workers' rights. He was proud of being a volunteer at KBOO Community Radio, writing news stories, conducting interviews, and doing audio editing. He was the first in Portland to break the Sandra Bland story, which became national news. Homelessness was another subject he was passionate about covering. Nathan was a gentle and kind soul with a fine sense of humor. Lately, he had been doing a very funny and convincing imitation of Bernie Sanders. While a somewhat shy person, he had a gift of conversing easily with all kinds of people and much empathy for the less fortunate among us. He was polite to a fault. Nathan is survived by Michael Behensky, his father, and stepmother Linda Rainey. Nathan was preceded in death by his amazing mother, Candace Miller Behensky. In lieu of flowers, the family requests a donation to the National Alliance to End Homelessness. Rest in love, Nate.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Paul Reich, Kanan Schlesinger, Tony Longshanks, and Chris Andre. The producer is Jared Dantzler. Special thanks to Jenka Soderberg. Our engineer is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Jared Dantzler.
And I'm Jenna. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Paul Roland hosts Wednesday Talk Radio, news and commentary on local, national, and international issues. At 9, on Political Perspectives, we hear excerpts from Report Back from COP21, a climate justice panel, with Jill Stein, Virginia Wiseman, Terry Lyde, and Marlena Murphy. At 10, it's Aircast Stadia with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on The Dirtbag, hosts Glenn Andreessen speaks with permaculture educator Marisha Auerbach about small space permaculture design. Plus, we discuss grape pruning. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth. Good night, Jenna.
Good night, Jared.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
A new agreement in principle is set to move forward detailing plans to remove the four dams along the Klamath River. The agreement, a collaboration between California, Oregon, the federal government, and PacifiCorps, dovetails off the failed Klamath legislation of yesteryear. For more on this new agreement, we will hear from interviews with two people closely linked to the struggle for Klamath River restoration. This is Jared Dantzler, KBOO News. I'm here speaking with Conrad Fisher, director of Klamath Riverkeeper. Welcome, Conrad.
Thanks for having me.
So we're talking about an update on the Klamath agreements. The Klamath restoration agreement was cut down at the end of last year for not meeting its timely requirement. And so amendments are looking to move forward on the Klamath hydropower agreement, including money from state money, not federal money, to remove these four dams along the Klamath River. Can you give us an update as to where we are today?
Sure. On the latest and greatest news is that on February 2nd, an agreement in principle was signed by the federal government, both states, and the dam owner, and that essentially sets out a path to implement one of three of the Klamath settlement agreements, the KHSA, which is specifically addresses dam removal. So basically we're moving forward with one of the three agreements, and water sharing and restoration will be dealt with on a separate track.
So what of dam removal and water sharing? Because this concerns the farmers, the irrigators in the area, as well as people who rely on that hydropower.
Right. So the Klamath settlement agreements included a comprehensive water sharing agreement signed between tribes and conservationists and fishing organizations. Those signatories to that agreement are still talking to this day about how to meet the needs of agriculture and also of fisheries interests. Klamath Riverkeeper, my organization, did not sign the settlement agreements, but we supported them in addition to other strategies to remove the dams. So as far as water sharing, I believe fundamentally water has been over-allocated in the Klamath Basin to the detriment of the ag community as well as those who depend on the river, and we basically need to restore balance. There are ways to do that that are painful to all sides, like lawsuits, and there are ways to do that that can be to the benefit of everyone, like voluntary transactions to reduce water demand and then allocating the water back to the river. And as far as the power productions, the dams produce very little power, and it's possible to replace that power with renewable energy elsewhere in the power grid. So it's very insignificant in terms of PacifiCorp's overall power production capacity.
How do you see the removal of those four dams affecting the community and the river?
Well, I live on the river, and for most summers I look at it and it's toxic green and I can't invite my family to come rafting. So as a community member, I am very excited to have the river no longer be toxic green as a result of the dams stopping the river and toxic algae growing behind the dams. It will improve the economy dramatically. More fish, cleaner water means more rafting, more fishing. It will mean more food security for Lower Klamath River tribes who for thousands of years have depended on salmon as a staple, and that has diminished a lot in recent years. So studies suggest that Chinook salmon populations alone will increase by more than 80% after dams are removed. So there are a lot of benefits for and not a lot of downsides.
What does your work entail moving forward as far as these amendments to the agreement, not only on paper, but who do people talk to and what are the moves being made?
Our role has been to engage and inform and mobilize the different constituents that depend on the river. So I think one of our biggest roles moving forward is to make sure the basic tenets of this agreement in principle are supported. We'll be encouraging the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, for example, to not stand in the way of this agreement by the dam owner and states and feds. There are things they could do to make it easy, things they could do to make it difficult. And we'll be pushing for revisions to the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement that is being negotiated right now and will hopefully be finished by February 29th. So we're in a mad dash to revise and finalize the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement so that we can move on.
And have you worked closely with the tribes in the area?
Klamath Riverkeeper was formed in large part by and for the tribes of the Klamath Basin. We have an 8-person board, half of which is members of the largest four Klamath Basin tribes. We do lawsuits with the Kudauk tribe, and basically I take my direction from not necessarily the tribal governments, but key members of the tribes and the activists within the tribes.
What about our listeners up here in Portland? We've have our own history with dam removal along the Columbia, the Snake River. How do you foresee the broader scope of West Coast politics and around ecological moves?
I think that Klamath dam removal effort is globally and regionally significant. I have 5 generations of family roots in Oregon, so I feel like as a somewhat Oregonian, I can very much support this. And I visited the Elwha dam removal site shortly after the dams were removed, and immediately there was new sand on the beach and kayakers going down and salmon reentering the river faster than biologists had suspected. So I think we are moving in a very good direction, and Klamath dam removal will, I believe, restore the economy and the fishery and water quality in both Oregon and California.
I've been speaking with Conrad Fisher, director of Klamath Riverkeeper. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
For KBOO News, I'm Jared Dantzler.
This morning, KBOO's Chris Andre spoke with Klamath Tribal Chairman Don Gentry about the Klamath River and to get his perspective on the new agreements. She asked Mr. Gentry about the tribe's claim on the land and fishing rights based on the original tribal treaty.
Well, it gets pretty complicated. You know, the dams are actually out of our treaty rights area proper, but we have rights to that we reserve to harvest and fish for salmon and steelhead that once came to the Upper Klamath Basin here, where we're headquartered, where we have our existing court-affirmed treaty rights. The dams are actually located off of our treaty rights area, but they certainly affect our ability to have salmon. It's been nearly 100 years now. When the first dam went in on the Klamath River, the Kopko 1 Dam, it went in without fish ladders, and eliminated or extirpated salmon and steelhead from where we exercise our treaty rights. So we certainly believe that that's an injustice. Those dams need to come forth. And actually, there needs to be a comprehensive effort to restore salmon back up to the headwaters here, you know, so our tribal members can once again fish for those salmon and steelhead. That's a right that we intended to reserve with our treaty. And but those dams are privately owned, though they're licensed by the federal government.
Yeah.
So, but what's encouraging in this process that's been forged, there's a door that's open and a pathway to remove those four Lower Klamath River dams without federal involvement. And that's why there's the move to amend the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, which is a sister agreement to the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, which is now terminated. And
wait a minute. So the Klamath Basin, the restorative has been terminated, and instead, in its place, we have what did you say?
The Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement was terminated because it wasn't legislated by the end of 2015. But the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, which is a standalone agreement, though closely linked to the KBRA, mm-hmm. is now the move is to amend that agreement to keep the funding that is in play to remove the dams that was provided through through California and also by Oregon ratepayers. So there's funding that's in place to remove those dams, so there's no requirement for federal dollars to do that. So what's happening now is there's